Member Pauser.
Matanuska Susitna Borough School District. Our vision, Matsu Borough School District will be a model of excellence in teaching, learning, and engaging all students. Our mission, Matsu Borough School District prepares students for success. We believe that all students can learn and want to. Success breeds success. The needs and best interests of students drive all decisions. Stakeholder participation is crucial to student success. Our core values, stewardship, accountability, empathy, quality, integrity, efficiency, respect, and lack of reprisal. Our goals. We will improve student success, achievement, and performance by focusing on their career and college readiness. We will increase the graduation rate. Our schools will welcome families and community members in the education of our youth. We will create and maintain a safe and healthy environment for our students and staff.
Thank you. Let us stand, and we're going to do the flag salute and pledge of allegiance. It's going to be led by Member Mitchell. We're going to turn this section of the meeting over to Dr. Perarmo.
Thank you, Mr. President, and thank you to the community of Talkeetna Elementary School and the Upper Susitna Valley for allowing us to have a meeting in your own backyard. It's a lovely place, and it was a wonderful drive. There is a reason why folks live here. It's a beautiful, beautiful country. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce the principal to the board. Everyone else probably locally knows. Please, I'll turn it over to Ms. Carol Wadman. Thank you.
What so proudly we hailed our You're serious? You do? Oh, I didn't know that.
That was very nice.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you.
Keep it low. Otherwise, yeah, they were very good. In fact, they were good on all the songs. Very good.
They were great.
This takes us down to our next item, item 2, approval of the agenda. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
I make a motion we approve the agenda.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Motion made by Member Lacey, approved by, or seconded by Member Welton. Seeing no opposition, the agenda is approved. This takes us down to item 3, which is our first persons to be heard on non-agenda items, and I'll read the guidelines for speaking. The speaker states his or her name for the record. The speaker is limited to three minutes per meeting. The speaker is limited to non-agenda items. Agenda items will be open for public comment as they appear on the agenda. The speaker's comments should be appropriate for all audiences, including school-aged children. The speaker is limited to comments of a general nature, positive or negative, which may not be attributable to any specific individual. Issues involving concerns specific to any single individual should be submitted in writing and given to the board clerk to be resolved. The issue may be determined to be appropriate for persons to be heard or may be handled in executive session or may be routed through a more appropriate complaint process. No disturbance or willful interruption of any board meeting shall be permitted. Persistence by an individual or group shall be grounds for the chair to terminate the privilege of addressing the meeting. The board may remove disruptive individuals and order the room cleared if necessary. This is not a question and answer time. Speakers may be referred to the superintendent or designee or take the issue under advisement. And we're going to have a maximum of 1 hour per meeting. This is a 30-minute session. Then towards the end of the meeting, there'll be another session. It'll be 30 minutes. So with that, I know that some folks have signed up. And so, Madam Clerk, can you let us know who is first to speak?
Sure. I want you all first to know that we don't have our timer here, so we will be timing on a cell phone. We're not texting. We're timing on the cell phone. When you have 30 seconds left, I'll hold up the card so you know when you're getting to the end, okay? Our first person is Tom Berg.
Please come forward. State your name for the record.
My name is Tom Berg. Good evening. I'm a social studies teacher at Colony High School and have been for the past 7 years. I stand in front of you tonight to provide my perspective on the seven-period day. I'm sure that I'm not the first to highlight these issues, but I still feel the need to reiterate them. After 1 year with the seven-period day, I can tell you that I have more students than ever before, less time with them than ever before, and little to no time to help them. While the seven-period day may have been meant to lower class sizes, it is not at my school. I have more students now than ever before, with roughly 30 minutes less per week per class to teach them. At 2 hours a month, we lose the equivalent of 2 weeks of instruction time per class. This has increased the amount of work outside of class for students and myself, as well as caused a conflict of what do I skip when it comes to curriculum decisions. As I teach mostly elective classes, I have the leeway to skip some things or just glaze over some. But math, English, science, and AP teachers don't have that luxury. When they choose to cut something, it could mean lower HSGQE or AP scores. As significant as class time is, we also as a district value connecting with our students to provide the best support possible. This has practically been eliminated. There is little to no time for the how was your weekend or how did the soccer game go, let alone a funny moment or current event you all witnessed or participated in. It is a bell question to a lesson, which you don't always finish, and a homework assignment or reflective thought as they leave the door to the next class. Every day, teachers are faced with a choice between two evils, falling behind in their curriculum to help a student or to press on and hope they get it. You hear the term customer service quite a bit these days in regards to our relationship as a district to our community. What type of customer service are we providing with no consistent mechanism to help students? While myself and many teachers make ourselves available after school, as a head coach of a major sport and advisor of several co-curricular activities, that time is often not available. Finding time within the school day to support students will continue to help our students grow academically, socially, and emotionally. I respect the job that you must do to balance money, time, and resources, but we must never lose sight of the most important ideal, is what we are doing good for kids. I will gladly work harder, stay later, and give what is needed if it increases student success. But after 1 year, I cannot say it does. Less time to teach, connect, and assist students is not a recipe for success. Time to teach and time to support must be carved out of this day, whether it be through flexing teacher schedules or even offering a study hall to most students. While both of these options would decrease some class options, the quality of education and support provided would greatly surpass the sacrifice. Thank you for your time, and good evening.
Thank you. I think that little red card means... Tell us what the red card means.
Red card means 30 seconds left.
Okay. Who's next, Madam Clerk?
Kristen Langhoff.
I'm Kristen Langhoff, and I'm a counselor at Colony High School. I was asked to be on the scheduling committee since its inception. One of the selling points of the seven-period schedule was the possibility of keeping low enrollment courses and adding intervention courses. Now, having built a seven-period master schedule, I'm seeing the results of this effort. A positive is kids who are missing fundamental skills are given another opportunity in their schedule to have targeted help. The downside is we have tracked kids to the point where 29% of the students in my school in an intervention course have 5 out of the 7 classes with their peers that have the same issues. Because these students are together a good majority of their day, they do not have the opportunity to see other students model enthusiasm for learning, good work ethic, and have positive peer pressure to have a certain level of class decorum. The new schedule has reduced instructional time to the point where staff and students do not have time together to always make a connection. Often this is happening to a kid who may feel disenfranchised by the traditional school and look at it as though we're torturing them one more period in a subject they already dislike. My high-flying students have a different challenge. They feel enormous pressure to add just one more thing because they think their peer is going to outgun them to the top 10% or the quest for valedictorian. In theory, they may think this is great that they can take another class, but instead they struggle to maintain an enormous workload and become an emotional wreck, drop classes, or end up doing poorly. My biggest concern, though, is what I see happening to the kids in the middle. This is my largest population, and yet the one I feel is most being underserved. The seven-period schedule in all reality has not added that much variety to course offerings. Instead, it's just added more sections of some of the same courses due to having to keep teacher course preparation at a manageable level. This semester, 91% of all seniors at my school have at least one off-campus where they have chosen not to take a course. I worked for 5 years as a counselor in ASD. Currently, half their high schools run on a modified six-period schedule, block schedule like we used to, and the other half operate on a straight six-period schedule. They also run district-wide CTE courses through their King Career Center. For at least the last decade, ASD has had success with a variety of school schedules and are still able to offer student choice. So what's a possible solution? Allow for schools to make site-based decisions about their schedule. For some, the seven-period schedule may be a necessity, but not for others. Although the scheduling committee was tasked with selecting the same schedule for all the traditional high schools, in reality, we already have some flexing of that mandate. Some of the high schools offer before and after school courses. Couldn't we expand those offerings and flex teachers' days? I advocate that we as a district evaluate how the seven-period schedule is working, if it's having the desired effect for our stakeholders, and if site-based individuality might be a possible solution. If we're trying to meet our community's desire for school choice, how could this evaluation be a bad idea? Thank you.
Thank you.
Nancy Podaski.
Good evening. I'm Nancy Podgorski, and I've already spoken with you about my frustrations of the seven-period day, but I'm here tonight to represent my colleague, Dr. Susan Brunner, who was unable to attend tonight's meeting, and ask that I speak on her behalf. Dr. Brunner invites each and every one of you to come shadow her for a day or part of a day in her classroom. She would love to have you come and visit and see firsthand what the seven-period schedule feels like. She says, "I don't pretend to understand the demands of being a psychologist or a mechanic or a pilot, but I also don't recommend how they do their jobs. If you are a pilot and go from point A to point B with a finite amount of fuel in a specific number of hours, I'm going to trust you know what you are doing. I would not dare suggest that you take the same parameters of fuel and time and then insist that you go 20% further in distance. And when you tell me it can't effectively be accomplished, I wouldn't offer you further training to help you learn to cope with the limitations I have thrust upon you. However, Because I am positive and proactive, I recently attended a district-offered one-day seminar, The Key Ideas, focusing on positive, meaningful, lasting changes. I sat in a room of 40 or so peers, counselors, administrators, teachers, and district coordinators who nodded approvingly at the message delivered. I couldn't help but be struck by the irony. The core framework is based on structure, creating a setting that is at the basic level organized for success. Teaching, beginning with expectations and standards. Observations, observe and monitor progress. Recognition, when something in the system fails, take appropriate measures to correct it. The prescription is a great one, logical, progressive, responsive, and in direct 180-degree opposition to the way the 7-day period was adopted and is being implemented. The district administration has touted the process as open and transparent when you have heard teacher testimony that it was not. There have been comments that it is too late in the game to change it. This is untrue. It was implemented rashly, and it can still be corrected. I have high standards for myself, my students, and my peers. I don't ask any more effort of my students than I'm willing to exert myself, but here's the problem. They can't give any more. They are tapped out, overloaded, rushed, confused, and giving up. I've covered 20% less content with my students this year. My kids are not ready to move on. They've been denied a quality education this year, not for lack of want of their teacher, but because the district imposed a 7-period schedule. In a public meeting for elementary schools this past week, our district administration stated that our schools should be about choice, and as a district, we should provide choices to our customers, the students and families. If that's the case, schools should be able to choose if the 7-period day works for their school or community or not. In an effort to remain positive and proactive, I am imploring you to correct the mistake of the 7-period day. Thank you.
Thank you.
Linda Holler.
My name is Linda Holler, and I'm a voter and a taxpayer and a teacher in this school district. It seems this will be the last time I'll get to speak to you about this issue before your retreat in June. And so here I am. And thanks to my husband, who patiently agrees to drive me, I can make use of car time. For me, this is not just about what the students are missing in my discipline, but what they're missing in all core areas, history, English, science. It's about educating the whole student. The greatest majority of our students will not attend or complete college. Many of them will attend trade schools for a specific skill, and that's okay. But it also means that high schools are last opportunity to create a culturally literate individual and for setting the seed for becoming a lifelong learner. To me, if you can accomplish these two things for any student, they can't help but be successful and immeasurably happier in their life after high school. Why? Because being culturally literate means that you share a body of information with everyone else in America, and it helps you negotiate your way through life. Here's an example of what I mean. When you see a magazine article titled Brave New Monkey, you know the topic because the title is referring to Aldous Huxley's novel, Brave New World. I had a student a couple of years ago, here's another example, who brought me an article from her teen magazine that used some of the common Latin phrases that we had learned, and she felt so proud that she was culturally literate enough to understand their meaning in the context of the article. I want all students to feel that pride in knowing they're part of that culturally literate group. We don't even think of these interpretations because they have become such a part of who we are. It helps us interpret our world. The losses under the 7-period day, we can never get back. But we can not repeat it. Can we add back some time here and there? Yeah, you bet, I suppose. if that were the only thing wrong with a seven-period day. But there is also that institutional-like atmosphere that we've created that's unpleasant. The added burden of more classes for students and teachers, and yes, less time for student-teacher contact. Lastly, I would like to say this. Do teachers think they can be effective? Of course. No teacher's going to say that they can't be effective. But if you phrase the question, can I be more effective with a 6-period day than a 7-period day? Yes, I can. Teachers also understand budget constraints. Many teachers spent time on phone calls, emails, and letters. Personally, I sent 7 letters to Juno. This feels like an us-against-them issue, and it shouldn't feel like that. We should be working together to solve this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jill Showman.
My name is Jill Showman. I'm the president of the Matsu Education Association. First of all, I'd like to thank Talkeetna and the Upper Susitna Valley for letting us come up here today. It's been an enjoyable evening, and I've had a lot of opportunities to talk to colleagues as we were driving up here. I wanted to discuss a couple of things about the 7-period day overview that was handed out at a previous school board meeting. And for those listeners who are on the radio, in particular, item 8, where it says there have been 14 formal meetings since January 2011 with subcommittees, union leadership, MSBSD leadership, school administrators, and the task force around the 7-period day. After rereading that, I would like to clarify that MSEA was not invited to several of those meetings. During January and February of 2011, while I was outside taking care of my mother, there were a couple of meetings where Don Campbell, who was our MSEA vice president, and Joe Boyle, who was our MSEA rights chair, first and formally talked to Dr. Kenneth Burnley about the potential change. Then last spring, Rick Burns, the previous CEA president, and I attended a couple of meetings. It was not a formal invite. We invited ourselves because we knew it would be a significant change, and we were going to get questions from members about this. It wasn't until February, March 2012, where we actually got a formal invite to hear some of the conversation. We had already heard much of the conversation regarding the 7-period day, talking to members back in the fall, trying to see where kids were at and seeing any progress from last year to this year. As you well know, MSEA conducted a survey regarding the 7-period day, and overwhelmingly, staff members have said that there are some issues. I understand that the board will be taking this up at the June retreat. I appreciate that, but know that we do have some concerns regarding the continued schedule. And I think what we can do, just as Mrs. Holler said, work together to make sure that we are doing what's best for kids. Thanks again for your time.
Thank you.
Sarah Kehoe.
Good evening, and thank you for being here. Thank you for coming to Talkeetna and this opportunity to speak with you today. My name is Sarah Kehoe. I am a parent. I have 3 children here at Talkeetna Elementary School. And I have just 5 quick things I would like to say. Firstly, I have been very active in the PTA, have been for over 8 years, and for the last 4 years I've served as PTA secretary. And I have written to you many, many times, and I want to thank you for your replies to my emails, for meeting with me in person, for your calls. I really appreciate it. It has really helped my understanding and helped me support my school, support my school district, our school district, and support my PTA and the members. So thank you. I'm very excited to hear that the 3% increase for education is on the borough manager's proposed budget, and I thank you for all your efforts in this regard. Please know that we're supporting you in this and that myself and my PTA president will be going down tomorrow to speak publicly in support of that. Thirdly, I'm very much in support of forward funding and would like to see everything you can do. I just think it helps everyone, particularly our administrators, to prepare thoroughly and plan in advance. It helps our teachers. It helps school morale. So thank you for all you're doing to try and work on that. Fourthly, I believe that we don't have a savings account as a school district, and I've been very impressed with what I've heard about the Anchorage school district, and I think this is a thing we should try and do to prepare for unforeseen events and save all that has to do to juggle budgets. So again, I support you in the effort to create a savings account if we can. And then lastly, I'm a strong supporter of preschool education. We're very fortunate here to have a preschool position in our school. It has helped our community immensely, and I thank you so much for what you've done to support that over the years. Just support you in any effort you can to continue such preschool education in our school district. Thank you very much for this opportunity to speak to you. Thank you for your work.
Thank you.
Carrie Larson.
Hello, my name is Carrie Larson, and I'm a parent at Talkeetna Elementary. I have two children in the school. I'm a PTA member, and I'm also a member of the Healthy Lifestyles Committee, which is part of the PTA. The Healthy Lifestyles Committee was formed 3 years ago, and we started out with a grant to provide a healthy snack once a week to all the children in the school. And it's been a very successful program. We've had just great feedback. The children really look forward to their snack every week. And we started out with just fruits and vegetables, and now we've expanded to things like homemade bread and butter and all different kinds of dishes. And we kind of pushed their limits of what they'll try. We did tofu the other day, and they actually liked it. So we're having great success. We've also implemented using real silverware in the kitchen here at lunchtime, and we've got a collection of real plates and things to use for events so that we can save on waste. We also provided the food for y'all tonight, so hopefully you get to have some of that and enjoy. We also applied last year for a farm to school grant, and we got that, and that was initiated by connecting kids with their food and where their food comes from. And through that program or that grant money, we had a great community potluck this last fall where everybody got to bring locally grown food that they grew or harvested, and we had a huge turnout. The kids have planted and harvested food and made butter. Some of the butter's over there on the table for you. And let's see, where am I? So anyway, our committee was formed because there was just such a great interest from parents wanting to see children exposed to healthy food, and we're doing that. But we'd like to express some concerns that the school breakfasts are very high in sugar. They're overly packaged and plastic wrapped. Also, the school lunches are lacking in fresh fruits and vegetables. They're also overly packaged and waste of plastic. Our ideal would be that kids would eat on a plate with some metal utensils. They could eat as much locally grown food as possible and as healthy as possible. We believe that getting kids exposed to healthy food while they're young encourages a lifetime of healthy eating, and there's a national push right now to make the food better in schools. So we would like to express thank you for your time and your consideration and any efforts that you can do in affecting change in the school lunch program and teaching kids about healthy food. Thank you.
Thank you
for coming.
Arthur Mannix.
Hi, folks. My name is Arthur Mannix. I am a parent. I have two adult children who are Sioux Valley High School alumni, and I'm here to talk about the Sioux Valley High School Wood, Heat, and Fuelwood Forest Project. In the past couple of weeks, I attended a meeting. I've attended a number of meetings, one a couple of weeks ago with the borough manager and with the head of public works, Sean O'Neill, as well as with representatives of the school district, Don Carney and John Phillips. And basically, I think some good decisions were made. One is because the borough project manager, Robert Scott, is very booked, decided to extend the schedule for the construction until next year of the wood-fired heating system, which is fine because I think it gives more time. There is funding available, and the request for proposals will be going out for the design and engineering of the project, as well as a separate grant, separate funds for a separate harvest and business plan. The design and engineering, of course, is going to go into the capital infrastructure for the facility. And then the harvest and business plan is for actually doing the economic assessment of the costs of operating the system. After which point, then, when we have a design and a concept, then that can be submitted to the school district for your review, and we can step up to assessing where we are. Then the other meeting that we had, I hosted a dinner of a couple of dozen people at a local restaurant here, and they were local loggers, local school teachers, representatives of the Upper Susitna Soil and Water Conservation District, and we had a powwow going over everything. And it was really wonderful. We had the engineers, the representative from the boiler manufacturer, some other consultants, and it was a real mix of a diverse group of people, and everybody was really on board, and it was really exciting to get all those different parties together. Then yesterday, I gave a presentation at Sioux Valley High to about 35 Sioux Valley High students who were and teachers, and they were very excited about the project. And then I also went out and into the woods with a teacher asked me to go out, and he was teaching a course on fire ecology, which goes into this whole program. Anyway, I have some copies here of the Career Pathways, the CTE development program at Sioux Valley High. And what is not offered, there's a bunch of things that are offered, business management, industrial and engineering, they're good things, but they have a list of things that are not offered. Among them is forestry. And what I also have here are some copies of the, the borough has a forestry curriculum on the books. And I just have a copy here. I have 10 copies of that. I only have a couple of copies here. But it's pretty straightforward. It's interesting. But what's really what's looking very exciting about this project is that the forester that the borough has decided to develop the harvest and business plan, which is basically the forestry plan and the business plan, Dr. Liang, formerly of UAF, now of University of West Virginia, and his assistant, forester from UAF, Tom Malone, have submitted their proposal to the borough, and it includes includes student involvement in the development and implementation of the management plan. And I have 10 copies of this I'd like to distribute to you, but I will in the proposal, it's going to be 2 years for them to be out in the field developing the plan. They're going to be studying the long-term effects among the forestry aspects. They're going to be studying the long-term effects of tree diversity on forest productivity, in which the Sioux Valley High School students will actively engage. They will also seek external funding from the National Science Foundation and the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and will help students and teachers from the Matsu Borough to actively engage in this experiment to obtain practical knowledge of biodiversity, tree plantation, and forest management.
You're going to have to finish up.
Okay. Basically, long story short, I've just been informed by the professors involved in this that they're very likely going to receive a $100,000 National Science Foundation grant that they're going to be bringing into this. And so what I'd really like to talk with you again at some time is how most of this stuff happens in the summertime when the schools are closed. And they're going to be able to bring in funding to compensate students for wages and their time in the field. And the YCC is a very popular program that the principal has. Okay. Thanks for coming up.
It's just that there's a lot of other folks.
I could take 3 hours instead of 3 minutes. Can I leave copies of this?
Leave them right here, and we'll pass them out. Okay. Thank you very much. Thanks.
Thank you. Donna Ingersoll.
Good evening. My name is Donna Ingersoll. Thank you for having this up here so I could enjoy the beautiful drive and the gorgeous view of your mountain that is so close here. I'm going to get right into this because I don't want to be flagged. The Mat-Su Borough School District advertises a mission statement that says it prepares students for success. Its introduction page of the district website opens with bold red print, doing our best to be the best. It speaks to the diversity of the student population in areas of socioeconomic culture and language backgrounds. It talks about how it welcomes diversity. Additionally, it gives the populations of the schools ranging from 12 to 1300. It says that it has a program to suit our child's needs. It also highlights in red that it focuses on innovation, choice, and let me underline that 15 times, choice, and customer service in meeting the needs of students and their families. Wasilla High School is the, as far as I can tell and as far as I know, the most populated of all the schools, so it is my belief that it should have the most choice of all the schools because it has the most students. My children have attended schools here at the Mat-Su Valley since they entered as kindergartners. I have always felt that they were getting a quality education. I have always felt that the district was doing its best and was preparing my children for success. Recent changes are eroding my confidence in this school system. I have always believed that the district provided every student with a pathway to success. I don't feel you are moving in that direction any longer. Next fall, my son will be entering his junior year and my daughter her freshman year. Both of my children take their education seriously and always strive to do their best. They have acquired many academic achievements and are very involved in athletics and music. They maintain high GPAs and have pushed themselves to qualify for the advanced track of classes. Being advanced has afforded them one perk that they are profoundly aware of and that they appreciate. They have been in classes with like-minded students. The district has adopted a new mantra at many of the area schools, and it's in reference to their discipline programs. But a parent or visitor can enter several of the buildings, and they will notice a poster that asks, "Are you a dipper or a bucket filler?" My kids appreciate classes with bucket fillers. They are exhausted of attending classes where the majority of the student population is encompassed with dippers. Since the district states that it focuses on innovation and, once again, choice and customer service in meeting the needs of its students, why are they eliminating honors classes? Where is their choice? The new educational terminology being adopted by Wasilla High School Administration is a phrase called vertical acceleration. It is my understanding that they are providing advanced direction by allowing students to take harder classes, but not in classes with predominantly academically focused individuals. It is more important that they share their positive role modeling. I get this. I understand this. But I'm not always sure that it's in their best interest. I believe that this is just a smokescreen to appease parents. I do not believe it is in the best interest of academic students. How will they compete with students from different districts that have honors classes on their transcripts? A university will invest in who they believe will bring the most talent to their schools. If they have choice between a student with an honors and an AP or IB classes on their transcripts and an equally high GPA student that does not have them, which student do you think that they will choose to allow their allow attending their university or possibly giving them a scholarship. I'm not buying that students without those classes on their transcripts have an equal opportunity for those possibilities. And I fail to see how Wasilla High School is going to create a learning situation for eighth graders coming over for Wasilla from Wasilla Middle School to take geometry that is not allowing them to have an honors style situation where, okay, you're not allowed to do this. We're going to shoot you off into five different geometry classes. It's not going to happen because they have to fall within the time frames. Are you suggesting that the school will be able to create several geometry options so that those students are not in the same class? Wouldn't that be affording those students special treatment? And yet an option is not available for other advanced students. Those who don't qualify for geometry just get randomly placed into upper level classes, maybe with academic students, maybe not. Can you honestly tell me that it is fair and reasonable? Oh, I'm almost done. I believe attending classes with equally motivated academic students raises the level of learning that is possible in a class. It is a group of bucket fillers that change the dynamics within the environment. Dippers stifle learning. How is that creating a pathway for success? There are 14 different classes for students with learning difficulties that offer them many choices in their pathway. There is nothing for kids with academic success if you take honors away.
Okay. Can you just finish up this last thought, because we're going on to 5 minutes almost here.
Let's please continue to have choices for them, not just for the kids at the low end. Keep choices open to kids at the upper end also. Thank you for your time, and I appreciate you listening to me, and I'm sorry I went over.
Thank you.
Have a good evening.
Kathleen Fleming.
Hello, I'm Kathleen Fleming. Thanks for going to all the schools and getting to see them and letting people in their communities chat with you. That's great. I was hired for the school district in 89, and for almost all of those 20 plus years I have worked at Talkeetna Elementary as both the custodian and the community schools monitor, two jobs, part-time jobs that dovetail together really well. I like my custodian job. I feel like I contribute to the health and cleanliness, a good environment for the teachers and the students for learning. Also, sometimes I get to participate in actual education. Astronomy is one of my hobbies, and I got to do a little work with a couple of the kids who are in Science O, and they won first place in Starry Night. I was very excited about that. I love my community schools job. This is my home long term, and I feel through that job that I'm able to contribute something positive to the community. And I'd like to say a couple of things about community schools that might not be obvious. Lifelong learning is one of the catchphrases in the school district and within a lot of individual schools, and it's really happening in the evening with adults coming into the school building and extending their learning process. And I like to think that the students maybe are also inspired by that, because they might know that adults are choosing to come into their classroom in the evening to learn something. And I think that must be inspiring to know that it doesn't just stop at 12th grade or whatever, that people want to explore their curiosity. Also, it's the local residents who pay property taxes, and the building is a public building owned, you know, essentially by the taxpayers. And this is an organized way for people who don't have kids in school to be able to come in and use the facility. And I think that when they come in and see the art or the science projects on the wall, or to see some of the great collages that that are on exhibit in the hallways, they get a sense of what great things the school is doing, and the teachers and the students are really making progress and doing interesting things. In a lot of small communities, the school building is sort of the heart of the community. I think Talkeetna has sort of expanded beyond that. But still, the building is very important to the community. It's It's already here. It's safe, lit. It's the only gym in the community, and there's a lot of people who can come together with different ideologies and work together. It builds a sense of community. And one more thing, if I may, I think that if the economy is to improve, and I hope it does, of course, and that there might be some more grant funds available from the state or the borough, that you might consider expanding the community schools programs to other schools in the district. Thank you.
Thank you. Madam Clerk, how many more folks? Is that it? Okay. We're going to take a quick, 10-minute break, and we would like to invite, if that's okay with the PTA, folks to share with some of the food that they brought over. So 10 minutes, please. Recess. Will you cut the mics?
Oh, excellent. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. That's perfect. Thanks.
Okay, crank her off.
Oh, I do.
You do have to ask.
Yes.
Everybody nod.
Okay, folks, we're going to bring us back into session. I'm going to ask the board for unanimous consent to suspend the rules so we can go back to the persons to be heard on non-agenda items. We've got, I think, two folks. Here are the two folks now, so that way if they wish to leave, they can do that. So, Madam Clerk, and remember, it is 3 minutes.
Then will we not have
Ellen Verosi?
Thanks for squeezing me in. My name's Ellen Verosi, and I've been an advocate for education since the day I stepped out of the womb. This year, I lobbied the legislators specifically for funds to support and certify STEM teachers in schools. I believe and have been told that I was influential in obtaining funds for the district. I applaud the district for their expansion of STEM, but I do have some concerns. Elementary teachers are not equipped to teach engineering and science content. We need to certify a cohort of STEM teachers K through 6. Two, the expansion of STEM should be broad and should be spaced thoughtfully throughout the district, not two schools who share a blurred boundary line that continues to be confounded. And I'm speaking of Cottonwood and Mockingtons, which are minutes away from each other. I think that all schools should be STEMs ultimately, but we should start with a good dispersal that represents the entire district. Thirdly, elementary schools need to have more stipends for math, engineering, and science Olympiad that's open to all children, not just talented and gifted children. A cost-benefit analysis would indicate that this would be a screaming deal, as we already have the teachers, their compensation package, and the infrastructure to do it. In summary, one, let's certify a cohort of STEM teachers, K to 6. Two, let's think thoughtfully of where we place STEM schools throughout the district. And three, let's give more stipends to elementary schools. Thank you.
Thank you.
Lori Miner.
Good evening, members of the board, and thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Lori Miner. I'm the Classified Employees President. And I would just like to give you a brief update on CEA's business that they've been conducting the last month. I'm going to start with the health insurance. NEA Alaska released the renewal rate on April 9th. For the following year, the fiscal year 12-13, the renewal rate was a zero. CEA then went to its membership to place the vote to them to decide on what they would like to do, remain with CEA or move in the direction that they had been working closely with the district in self-insured. On April 24th, we opened the polls to allow our members the opportunity to vote on their health insurance. The results of that vote were overwhelming and in favor of remaining with NEA Health Trust. I'd like to thank CEA's insurance committee for working very diligently with the district on the health insurance and moving forward next year in the process of possibly going to the self-insured. Today, members of our bargaining team, CEA's bargaining team, met with the district to begin the process of bargaining for the fiscal year 13-14 contract. And lastly, each year the Classified Employees Association awards graduating seniors and members who are continuing their education. That award is the Lee Warner Scholarship. And I'd like to announce the winners of this year's Lee Warner Scholarship. From Palmer High School, we have Augustus Topp, who is the son of Darcy and Bart Topp, and Darcy is a special education assistant at Swanson Elementary School. Our second recipient is Benjamin King, and Ben is the son of Herb King, who works in the MIS department at Admin. And our employee this year that receives the Lee Warner Scholarship is the Houston High School Registrar, Lisa Bell. We would like to thank all of the participants who put their application in, and we will be awarding those awards to Palmer High School on Wednesday the 9th and to the Houston High School staff member on Thursday the 10th. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. This takes us down to item 4, which is Borough and City Reports. Superintendent Parmo.
Does the City of Wasilla have a report?
We're waiting for alphabetical order. We have Palmer first.
My name is Bert Cottle, City of Wasilla. Mr. President, board members, I have two items tonight. The first one is the next and ever-ending step in the library process. The borough administration has signed off to transfer the land. It now goes to the platting board, and the 30th of this month, end of the month, it will be approved, we believe, by the platting board. And I'll report back after that what the next process is. We're hoping by the end of summer we have big signs up over there that says the future home of the Wasilla Library. So we're working very hard to get that to happen. Second is City of Wasilla has started cleanup days. They run from May 1st to May 12th. Anybody who's in the city limits or in that area that wants cleanup bags, you can stop by City Hall, Sports Center, and or the Chamber of Commerce and pick up the yellow cleanup bags. The borough has donated bags to us, and also we have a couple of large dumpsters available in town that you can put your trash in that you pick up. So if you need any bags or any information, contact the City of Wasilla. Thank you.
Thank you. Palmer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Superintendent, members of the board, staff. I'm giving you paper, so I don't have to talk about everything. A couple of quick contacts on the handout. A couple of things that are in a very preliminary stage. Meeting with a gentleman who's looking at trying to take the Wi-Fi service that we have in downtown Palmer, maybe and broadening it a little bit. So we're in a very preliminary stage of discussion about ways that the city might be able to assist so that people could get obviously unsecured Wi-Fi access in however people define downtown Palmer. So that's begun. Also, at the last city council member, a representative of the Great Land Trust approached the city council to begin sort of a dialogue about perhaps purchasing, and then the city would ultimately be operating a park of some size north of the Cedar Hills subdivision, which could someday become a facility for some of the Palmer activities in terms of cross-country ski trails and stuff. This is a multi-year over-the-horizon thing, so it's not something that's going to happen probably within the next couple of years, but we are going to be working with Great Land Trust to secure about 100 acres of property there that would be, we would hope, might develop into sort of a mini Kincaid type of an arrangement with running trails, ski trails, and all kinds of year-round activities that could be utilized by the school district. So at some point, we may engage the school district to become involved with that. And final, the last pitch, we've got our cleanup day coming up, too, on May 12th, but that's what I'm not here to pitch that. We're here, and I have copies in the back. If anybody in the audience would be interested in coming to Palmer to is being billed as our project fair, but it's one of the things where we're trying to just get all of the city of Palmer out there engage with our community. And, of course, we serve both residents and people in the greater Palmer area that come in and pay sales taxes and use of our services. So it's also part of our process of prioritizing our legislative requests for next year. So with that, I know you have a busy agenda and a long drive back for some of you, so I'll conclude. Thank you very much for the time. Any questions? Thank you, sir.
Takes us down to item 5, administrative reports, A, student special recognitions. Dr. Paramo.
Thank you, Mr. President. At this time, we're going to make some special announcements. The school board 4 times during the year recognizes students for exceptional work at their schools, in the community, and we wanted to, even though some of these awards were mentioned in Palmer at the school board, we would like to especially mention them here in your home in Talkeetna Elementary School for the students here. It's a beautiful night. We know that the students might not be here, but we are live on Radio Free Palmer, and so they will become famous. And so I might just stay at the mic so that we can the audio is held, but we are pleased to announce the recognition of Talkeetna Elementary School students. This elementary school, and it is an elementary school of under 100 students, and we have elementary schools of over or nearly 500, I'd like you to know that Talkeetna Elementary School Battle of the Books team took 2nd place for their 5-6 grades. This team was coached by Holly Papasadora. Is Holly in here tonight? Holly? No? I believe Holly is a parent volunteer for this Battle of the Books. So this is a big competition with many, many teams across the district, at least 44 other teams, and Talkeetna's children of Isabel Stewart, Anya Schwartz, Kate Lund, and Nova Papasadora took 2nd place in the Mat-Su Borough School District. Congratulations. In addition, Talkeetna Elementary School students participated in the district-wide math derby. They were coached by a very talented teacher who is a PE teacher, art teacher, and obviously a math derby teacher, Miss Karen Mannix. These group of students competed in quite a few math problem solving, math skills, and Talkeetna Elementary School in this event took 1st place in the district. And I would like to recognize each student by name: Isabel Stewart, Anya Schwartz, Aiden Jolly, Cy Jolly, Mackenzie Richter, David Kreppel, Caro Germain, Sam Check, and Angelo Mangione. Great names. Congratulations, students. Once again, way to go, Talkeetna. And we would like the coach to come up, Miss Karen Mannix, if you would come to the front. Ms. Mannix, we do have certificates for each of your students, and we'll have them presented by Board President Mr. Michael Dunleavy. Don't go anywhere. Ms. Mannix, don't go anywhere, because your team's competition and also the Science Olympiad should be recognized. Again, coached by Miss Karen Mannix, a woman of many educational talents, took 2nd place in the district-wide Science Olympiad. Once again, we do have certificates for these students. I apologize for interrupting. But once again, by name, Maya Mossinen, Anya Schwartz, Teve Loeb, Angelo Mangione, Kai Kingerly, Isabel Stewart, Mackenzie Richter, Brandon Betts,
Caro Germain and Danielle Kehoe. Hopefully those names are all right. Congratulations. And the success continues, if I may also announce the Sioux Valley Junior Senior High School Awards. I just like being able to see these kids' names just over and over again. Not sure many know, but probably locally they do, so we want to let the world know in the Mat Valley on Radio Free Palmer that the 2012 State Cheerleading Competition, the academic award for the highest cheer team, highest GPA, collectively with a 3.76, belong to the Sioux Valley Cheerleaders. Congratulations. And they are Cindy Hagen, Emily Hartley, Sierra Peterson, Ayla Loper, and Zena Deloach. And then finally, this is most exciting. This is not only a district winner, so this team had to have won the district battle of the books in order to move on to the state level. This team from Sioux Valley High School, competing with schools that are as large as 2,400 and as small as perhaps 50. In the state battle of the books, the Sioux Valley Junior Senior High School took second place in the entire state. And their three readers are Bailey Simon, Hannah Starbuck, and Heidi McKee. And that concludes the recognition that we would like to give your children in your home in Talkeetna. Thank you.
There's a lot happening up here in the Upper Valley, that's for sure. So this will take us down to item six, superintendent update, student advisory board report. Member Mitchell, do you have a report?
Good evening. Tonight I'd just like to report on the Student Advisory Board meeting at Palmer High School on April 23rd. It was our final meeting for the year, so we were wrapping things up. During the meeting, we had two motions brought forward to have amendments to our bylaws, and the first motion was to create a middle school executive board position, and the second was to create a motion where it would be required for every high school to have their student body president in as a member of student advisory board. The first motion failed in creating the middle school position on executive board, and the second motion was amended so that it was required for every student government to have a member of their executive board as a member of student advisory board also. We continued our work session in creating our mission statement, and it was voted and reads as follows. As a student advisory board, we will work to improve intra-district relationships and provide a dynamic voice to the MSBSD school board and administration to create a positive change for education and well-being. My final announcement is that at our meeting, we also discussed the seven-period day, and students are very interested in being a part of the June discussion, the work session that will be taking place. And so when more details are announced, we have students who are willing to participate. And also, next year, Kendra McPhail will be sitting in the student representative position for the school board. Thank you.
Just a quick question. Member Mitchell, when is your last meeting with us?
I'm sorry?
When is your last meeting with
us? This is my last meeting.
Oh, okay. Well, just briefly, I'll save it for comments at the end. Okay, thank you. This takes us down to our superintendent report, Dr. Parma.
Thank you, Mr. President. I do have a few brief announcements, and then I'll turn it over to Mr. Forrest for the capital projects update. I'd like to announce that Governor Parnell did sign into law the bill for school funding today. We expect to have the calculations done and the exact numbers sent to our district by the Department of Education and Early Development as soon as a couple of weeks, so that will finalize our numbers that we believe will provide the state funding. Currently in the borough budget, the 3% increase to the Mat-Su borough is remaining, but of course the borough hasn't finalized their budget, but we are positive that it will remain in the district-wide budget as well as a 3% increase, noted that 1.5% for last year where we were 0 and 1.5% for this year. What this did for Mat-Su was to restore the positions at schools and restore the metrics that we use this year. To note, we still are 125 less employees in the Mat-Su borough this year than we were last year, but we hope to retain all teachers in positions that would like to remain with us in their second and third year tenured if there's positions. And by attrition, we should retain our classified folks that would like to remain employed. Of course, all those folks would be in good standing and all that. Great folks to work with us. But we're happy to announce that we're holding ground and not losing teachers and retaining the teachers and the aides and the assistants that we have in school that we have now. And so we're pleased. We're pleased about that. It's certainly a relief for many families that are employed with us. So with that, we also do have a capital projects update provided by the borough.
As of today, the borough project manager sent the following update on the 2010 bond related to roofs. Wasilla High School roofs should be completed before school starts. Wasilla Middle School should be redone by before school starts. Palmer Junior Middle School, the same. Butte Elementary School, Snowshoe Elementary School. The administration center is currently in progress and should be finished by midsummer. Houston Middle School, reseal on that roof. And Finger Lakes Elementary, rainproofing. With regard to the other projects, just a brief summary on some of the projects and the status with regard to the bond that was passed in last year in October. Big Lakes Elementary School, the project has started, and they are estimating substantial completion by April 2013, so a year from last month. So Big Lakes should be done. The prioritization for some other funds would be obviously Palmer High School renovation, the restrooms at the six schools that were listed before, the generator sets and the lockers. We're unsure as the status on those funds at this time. The security bond, which the district has been in the process of executing, is almost done, and we believe it'll be substantially complete by the end of the summer. Most of you know the Houston lights on the football field were put in. And there's just a few things there to clean up. The Palmer turf went to the assembly last night for first reading. And so that project is underway. That will be both turf and track. Trapper Creek roof, that is a repair that we're seeking assistance from the borough on. In addition to that, some of the other ones are listed, but we don't have any plan from the borough just yet as to when they think they're going to start on those projects.
Thank you.
That completes the report. Thank you.
Excuse me.
Member Gaddis.
Yeah, quick question. You indicated that the restrooms, generators, you're not sure where the money is, or did you mean you weren't sure what the status is?
They are not in the current issue that's been issued by the borough, so it will be at least a year.
I got it. So we're on a consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. This takes us down to item 7, consent agenda. Is there a motion to move the consent agenda?
I'd like to make a motion that we move the consent agenda A, the minutes of April 18th, B, 12-123, continuation of K-12 tobacco prevention grant, C, 12-126 high school graduation qualifying exam waivers, and D, the recommendation, or 12-131 recommendation for principal hire, Palmer High School.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Motion made by Member Lacey, second by Member Pauger. We're going to do a roll call vote. Member Gaddis?
Yes.
Member Pauger?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Lacey?
Yes.
Member Larson? Yes. And I, too, vote yes. Motion passes. This takes us down to item 8, action items. A, 12-121 Midnight Sun Charter School calendar. Is there a motion to move this item?
I'd like to make a motion. We move 12-121 Midnight Sun Charter School calendar.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Motion made by Member Lacey, seconded by Member Welton. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak upon this item? Seeing none, is there a staff report?
We are prepared to answer any questions, Mr. President.
Are there any questions for members of the board? Member Welton?
What is the major difference in the calendar? Just to clarify it for me.
Mr. Stone?
Excuse me. I didn't hear your question, Ms. Welton.
What's the major difference in this calendar than is it the early release time?
Yeah, the main thing is that the charter schools, some have built in different professional development, and we've offered flexibility for them to do that.
Member Welton?
And the early release is also different than the regular schools.
Correct.
Yeah, that's the professional development. I think that's yeah.
Member Larson, do you have any questions on this item? Thank you. With that, we're going to vote. Member Lacey?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Pauger?
Yes.
That was a yes. Member Gaddis?
Yes.
I, too, vote yes. Motion passes. It's unanimous. I'm sorry, Member Larson. I temporarily forgot about you. Thank you. This takes us down to B. 12-122, second reading, BP 6190, Charter Schools. Is there a motion to move this item?
I'd like to make a motion. We move 12-122, second reading, BP 6190, Charter Schools.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Motion moved by Member Lacey, seconded by Member Welton. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak upon this item? Seeing none, is there a staff report?
I'm prepared to answer any questions, Mr. President.
Are there any questions for members of the board? Member Larson?
Certainly, Member Larson. Board Policy 6190 for charter school requests that two charter schools for every meeting in May and June present before the board an end-of-the-year report. As we've grown in charter schools and I guess clarity of what should be presented, we've worked with the charter schools to come up with a template for which the end-of-the-year report could be made. And it would be made, it is a design template by the charter schools used by the National Charter School Association, and it compares data, budget results, other learning information in regard to each school amongst the entire district. And so it's just a uniform way to provide the information requested for an end-of-the-year report in Board Policy 6190, rather than in person.
Mr. Larson, any additional questions? Okay. Members of the board? With that, let us vote on the aye. Excuse me. Member Welton?
Can we have discussion?
Yes.
Okay. I would like to know that the reason in the beginning that we had the face-to-face was because we wanted to make sure that the people were who they said they were and things like this. It's not that we don't trust people, but we want to know, you know, that there are people on the board and things like this. And I question that we don't get to know our charter school people, the people who serve on their APC boards or the principals very well. And I question if this, if this is just to expedite things so that we're not, the board doesn't have to sit through the presentations and stuff. I kind of feel that we're slighting the charter schools, and maybe that's just a personal sight on that. So I'd like to have. Does anybody have anybody else on the board have a feeling about whether it's meaningful to do the reports, or we can do this just by getting a summary, if this is enough for us?
Member Gaddis.
I kind of feel like Member Welton, but I would like to be invited to the APC board when they do their presentation to their parents. I would like to at least have that opportunity for the charter schools to invite the board those who can come when they do that presentation to their school. So kind of backwards, but it allows us also to go to their school and meet everybody at that one presentation. Not a mandatory, but, you know, to be in part of the invite.
Member Powger.
I like the information that is included in the rewrite. I like to get all of that same information, test scores, all that kind of budgeting information in the same way from each of the charter schools. So I do like the rewrite in that way.
Member Welton.
Has there been any feedback from the charter schools as to whether this is something that they think is a very good idea and that they're all for it?
Dr. Perromo.
Ms. Welton, in fact, this was a design by the charter schools. The board, if you will, charged administration as one of the objectives for the year to work with the charter schools to come up with a template for evaluation. Throughout the year, we have met, researched items. What you have before you is a creation by the charter schools for the charter schools for the board in conjunction with administration.
Member Welton.
Then I will withhold my objection to this if they're the ones that did present it, because I just didn't want to feel that the board was saying we don't want to hear from you.
I have a question. This would be presented in the spring, correct? Spring of the year?
Yes, sir.
We may be able to take care of a number of I think legitimate concerns and schedule joint meetings with the charter schools in the spring, a place to be determined. Could be their schools, could be where we will be regularly holding the meetings, and just have a work session and a meeting and have that part of it. Okay. So with that, we have 12-122, second reading, BP 6190, charter schools on the floor. Member Larson, any questions? Let us vote. Member Gaddis?
Yes.
Member Powger?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Lacey?
Yes.
Member Larson? And I, too, vote yes. Motion passes. It's unanimous. This takes us down to C. 12-127, reemployment of non-tenured second and third year teachers. Is there a motion to move this item?
I'd like to make a motion that we move 12-127, reemployment of non-tenured second and third year teachers.
I'll second it.
Motion made by Member Lacey, seconded by Member Welton. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak upon this item? Seeing none, is there a staff report?
Mr. President, we are just thrilled to be able to do this.
Any questions for members of the board? Comments for members of the board? Let's vote. Member Larson? Member Lacey?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Powger?
Yes.
Member Gaddis?
Yes.
I, too, vote yes. Motion passes. We're going to take another brief recess because we have a cake. And we thought there'd be a lot of young folks here to help eat that cake. So since there's not, we need a little help in taking care of the cake. So let's take a few minutes, please, again, and let's dig into the cake. Sorry, Mr. Larson. Can you unmute me?
Yeah.
There's still half a cake back there. So we're counting on Talkeetna just for this one moment to eat a little less, I don't want to say healthy per se, but just kind of, you know, everybody deserves a party every now and then. Okay, this takes us down to item 9, non-action items. And just for the folks here in Talkeetna, once again, these are items that we'll be discussing and possibly placing on the next agenda, or excuse me, next meeting agenda. And these items at this time do not take in public testimony until they're on the agenda for the next meeting. So with that, item 9, non-action items. A, 12-125, first reading, BP 5142.2, return to play. Administration?
Thank you, Mr. President. This first reading is pretty simple. The state law changed, and for the concussion bill, if you will, it was just a medical professional that could assess a child to go back to play. They've added the language to allow a certified athletic trainer to also determine whether children can go back to play. That's the primary difference. And we would like to update our policy to also allow athletic trainers as the law provides in the state of Alaska.
Questions from members of the board. Member Larson? Other members? Seeing none, Member Lacey?
Through the chair, do we have qualified people at our sporting events and at our practices to assess a student's right to return and whether or not they got their bell rung?
Through the president, yes.
That's all I know.
Member Powger?
This says that it needs to be a qualified person who's received training and is currently certified. What's the certification?
Through the president, a certified athletic trainer.
Okay. Any other questions for members of the board? Again, seeing none, this will appear on our next meeting agenda. This takes us down to B, 12-128, potential Macintons Elementary boundary change. Dr. Perarmo.
Thank you, Mr. President. Are we going to need the projector?
No.
This evening? Okay. We will be giving a verbal report. We've provided you data in packets, which would also be pushed on the screen, but we do have them available for audience members if needed. Please know that I provide a little bit of information about this. I'm going to provide some history. Many of you sat on the board years ago when the Matsuburo School District and the Matsuburo itself put into plan and on a bond election for a South Palmer Elementary School. It was delightful that a site was selected in conjunction with a builder and a developer, and that school became Macintons Elementary School. However, at the time of its opening, there were probably less than 20 schools or 20 homes around the school. There were not enough students to go to the school. It was a South Palmer school, and so it was the original plan was to alleviate Swanson and Sherrod. This board heard from community members in Palmer that certainly, while they appreciate a school being built and a bond being passed, that Macintons, while it does have an address of Palmer, and it is south of the Parks Highway, it truly was really outside of the boundary of Palmer City. And they went to the board and said, please leave us in our schools. And we knew that by moving some other specialized programs out of those Palmer schools, we were able to accommodate that. In addition, the opening of other charter schools and academy charter taking more students really did accommodate what was happening. We are feeling growing pains again, but we will discuss a new Palmer School in a new bond in 5 years. Once Mokattam's did open, they had to really stretch the boundaries to get students to attend. There was a discussion about mothballing the school. And there was some concerns about that. And so making the best decision at the time, we did have other schools that had were reaching capacity at that time and were at capacity. And so in order to move students into the school and balance boundaries that occurred at that time, students from Pioneer Peak, Finger Lake, just set neighborhoods, so it was maybe 20 kids here, 20 kids there. The majority came from Cottonwood Creek and Snowshoe Elementary Schools, about 100 from each of those schools to move into Mokattam's. Mokattam's first couple years were under 300. We moved a very popular program to Mokattam's because they did have room. And within the last year, actually 3 years, but within the last year, there's reportedly a home started a week. With projections, with our experts working with the borough, Mokattam's is soon to be over within 2 years, over 625 students approximately. When we met with Mr. Bingham to discuss the Wasilla boundaries and redistricting those schools, what came to light with the focus groups was the immense situation and overcrowding possibilities at Mokattam's. Therefore, the focus group started studying the situation in December, with small groups of interested parents, staff members, both at the district and school level, as well as parents, to work with Mr. Shannon Bingham, a contracted demographer and designer of boundaries, to see how we could solve the problem. And he will report that the group collectively said, really it doesn't make sense to bus kids north of the Parks Highway all the way to Mokattam's on the other south of the highway. However, this is good news in a way because the folks in Mokattam's love Mokattam's, and so change is difficult, and they love the principal, and they love their teachers, and they love their schools, and so we're going to proceed carefully in working with these families for a transition. And with that, I welcome Mr. Shannon Bingham. The board has contracted, the district has contracted with Mr. Bingham, a professional in this field.
Thank you. I have a brief report. Just continuing on with the due process, we had three or four steering committee meetings that were well attended at Cottonwood, Wasilla Middle, and Mokattam's. We had an open house Monday night at Colony High School that was attended by approximately 25 parents, and a lot of children were there as well. And we surveyed and collected letters of intent from those parents, some of whom turned in the letter of intent after they left. But I did survey them while they were there.
Mr. Bingham, can you pull that mic closer to here so the audience can hear as well?
That's the end of the cord. I'll get closer to it. How does that sound? I've also done 250-piece mailings, direct mailings, and plan to do another to report your status after your conversation tonight. I've also called a significant number of these parents personally and spoken with them to try to gauge their thinking about this. The steering committee identified four areas that could be north of the Parks Highway that would be reassigned. Area one is west of Higher Road and west of the Meadowbrook subdivision and south of the Meadowbrook subdivision. That's called Area One. That would be assigned to Cottonwood. That would be about 65 students. Area two is the Meadowbrook subdivision, and the proposal the primary proposal is to put those students in Pioneer Peak. Area 3 is the neighborhoods immediately north of Meadowbrook in the kind of triangle of the Palmer-Wasilla Highway and kind of the north edge of the Meadowbrook subdivision. And then Area 4, which is the area between the hospital and the university, right off Trunk Road. Area 4 actually triggers another bus. If we were to switch this area to the three schools I mentioned, it would be cost neutral, meaning it would cost nothing to transport those students. If we take the, we also had kind of a secondary proposal in our steering committee of taking everyone to Cottonwood. And as I poll people, Cottonwood is the most popular alternative among the parents, quite frankly. As I called them and as I polled them, they were somewhat receptive to going to Cottonwood. If we took Area 4, which is on the west side of Trunk Road, between the hospital and the university, that would trigger an additional bus at a cost of about $74,000 per year. The way I have portrayed the change is that we would go to those three schools. Area 2 would go to Pioneer Peak, and Area 4 would go to Pioneer Peak, which was their original assignment. They're very close. Some Anchorage commuters have said they would like that. But again, the majority of the people that I talk to very, very, very much want to remain at Mockingtons. So those two areas, Area 1, which is Meadowbrook, Area 4, which is between the university and the hospital, they would go to Pioneer Peak. That's about 75 students. Area 3 is the area that would go to Finger Lake. It's immediately adjacent to the Finger Lake attendance area, but those students would ride past Pioneer Peak on their way to Finger Lake unless they canoe across Finger Lake, which isn't a very viable way to get to school. So some of the parents that I spoke to there were not in favor of going to Finger Lake because of the transportation logistics. The proximity, though, and the fact that that used to be the Finger Lake attendance area made some sense. The other students that are in the western half of the area proposed for change would be about 65 students. They would go to Cottonwood Creek. From a count standpoint, there's room in these three schools. Cottonwood Creek is projected for 364 next year. They have a deed capacity of 437. Pioneer Peak is projected for 342 next year. They have a deed capacity of 437. Finger Lake is projected at 290 next year. They have a deed capacity of 444. Mockingtons is projected at 481 next year, and they have a deed capacity of 440. So we're already over capacity, and given the rate at which the ranch is putting new homes online, the parents seem to acknowledge the reality that the school could be overrun. They also understand when we talk about the area north of the freeway, aka the Parks Highway, they kind of understand why we're proposing reassigning that area. So as reasonable folks, they understand why we're proposing what we're proposing, but all of these families are heavily invested in Mockingtons. How I'm portraying the change is that current third and fourth graders, which would be fourth and fifth graders next year, kind of the juniors and seniors of the elementary age group, that they would be allowed to finish. We would also allow their siblings to finish so we wouldn't split families. I proposed that way because that's been my tradition in understanding your desires from the last boundary change that you did. I kind of go, how does this board think? They like continuity. They like children to finish if they have a significant investment in a school, and they're willing to pay for that if necessary. So I've also portrayed that we would double bus the area for 2 years. In 2014, the state will change its funding formula in a significant way, and we will no longer have the resources to pay for busing in 2014. So I said 2 years was what we would be able to do on dual transportation. There are a lot of large families in this area, families with four or five children ranging in age from 2 or 3 to 10 or 11. So some of that two-year time frame consideration was very significant for some families that were saying, well, why can't you do it for 4 years? And again, it would be probably a significant cost to dual transport that area once the state's transportation funding changes kick in 2014. So I've portrayed it to them as a two-year change. There are families that date back to the older boundaries that are saying, you're moving us again, but because we're allowing current third and fourth grade students to finish, there aren't individual children, unless they started in preschool at Cottonwood, that are being affected again. Some of the families slightly disagreed with me when I tried to kind of find out what their circumstances on that were, but I think it's mostly some of the families are being affected twice. It's not necessarily individual children. There were 25 parents at the open house, or 25 families. Their polling, after I got some of the forms from Mockingtons for folks that turned them in there, were 23 of 30 forms, families wanted to stay at Mockingtons. Four wanted to go to Cottonwood if they had a chance. Two would go to Finger Lake. One would go to Pioneer Peak. The three principals from Cottonwood, Pioneer Peak, and Finger Lake did excellent presentations for these families. The program at Cottonwood, which is called STEAM, which is a STEM program with an added component of iPads and the arts. So the A in STEAM is for the arts. There was a fine presentation given. A lot of parents from outside of the affected area want to go to Cottonwood now and plan to apply to go there. Finger Lake is adding an arts program, and a lot of parents. I gave David Newfer three applications at a gas station where I saw him today of parents that want to go to Finger Lake. So I had these three forms with me, and I took them out of my folio, and I gave them to him at the gas station at Seward Meridian and Palmer Wasilla Highway. The third program, the CLIMB program at Pioneer Peak, as many of you know, is one of the most successful literacy development programs in the district, and those students are incredibly successful. So Dan Molina gave an incredibly good presentation on his program as well. So a lot of options for parents on what they could do. We think we did a really good job of that. Let's see. At Mockingtons, we currently have 230 boundary exception applications. 160 of them are from their existing students. Lisa at Cottonwood Creek, Lisa Verbalo, has 145 in hand. A lot of those are from her existing students who are there from other attendance areas. Of the ones at Mockingtons, 70 of them were new applications. There are 64 STEM applications. 51 of them are STEM applications from the area north of the Parks Highway that we're proposing to move. There are 144 children in the area that we're proposing to move. We're already 30 students over capacity. We have told Mockingtons that we will not install a portable classroom there. So we're trying to avoid running that school over 500. It's not on a paved road. From a neighborhood functionality standpoint, I can't see how we would operate that facility in that location with that level of intensity. I mean, it would look like a big dust cloud. Until we get that road paved, I don't know how we would really put a big bank of portables there and be able to make that work very well. So I would like to answer your questions. I think that I'm suggesting that you take action because I think the parents would like to get some sort of a direction before the end of May on what your thinking might be so that they'll know before school is out where their child will be next year. The families, four or five of the families at the open house communicated to us their desire to know something before the end of May. So with that, I'll respond to your questions.
Questions for members of the board. Member Larson? Member Pollager?
I remember in a report sometime last year, you told us that people who transfer into schools and then the transfers out of most elementary schools are pretty static. In other words, the same amount of children who are in the boundaries ask for exemptions to go outside as the children who are being received in. Obviously, this isn't the case with Mockatons. If we were to make that same kind of case, what would Mockaton's attendance be? The kids in the new area, how many children would be at Mockaton's?
And you are correct that we have a pretty stable amount of movement around the district between our buildings, or at least we have for the last 3 years. Mockaton's is a real spike because we have the STEM program there. So half of the children in the STEM program are from outside of the Mockaton's attendance area. That's the policy design of the school within a school. As far as how would Mockaton's look, those 60 to 80 children would not be in the enrollment, and it might be sitting at 410 or 400. As far as how will this boundary look, the ranch will inject new students into the school every year. We've been growing by 35 to 50 children per year at Mockaton's every year, which is kind of the figure, the 2 years into the future figure that Dr. Paramo was citing that we're trying to avoid. But if we take these 144 children out, we're projecting 482 next year, that leaves us with 340, and I would suspect that the ranch will replace those students over that 3 or 4 year period and will be back up into 450, 460 by the fall of probably 2015, 2016, we'll be back there in that fully utilized enrollment range. We propose a school in a bond election that might be submitted in the fall of 2016 after our five-year horizon has expired, and that school could be a Palmer Elementary School that would serve to relieve Sheridan Swanson, and that could also address, we could also look at other schools in the Hay Flats. We also potentially have the opportunity to use some of the space in Snowshoe Elementary, conceivably, to make a few changes by then, but I suspect growth in the Hay Flats will fill up Snowshoe as well.
Member Welton.
Since we have canceled our meeting on the second meeting because of graduations and things, we are not having another meeting scheduled. Do we need to have a special meeting so that we can be sure that parents have an opportunity and anybody in who has issues concerning the boundaries can come to speak to us in a public hearing?
So Member Welton is asking, because school will be out when our next meeting is, and parents may be planning vacations, et cetera. So there's a request by Member Welton, and really it's to the members of the board. Should we be scheduling a special meeting, and one-item meeting that would take a 24-hour notice, and to take a vote on this so that parents have an opportunity to come and speak? Member Lacey?
Yes, we should have a meeting.
What do you think, Member Larson? Member Gaddis?
I do think that we should have a meeting, although I do have some questions and some comments before we get to that point. Yes. I do think we should.
Let's just finish this up and go back to you. Member Pollager. And Member Welton, I believe and I feel the same. So we'll get towards the end of the meeting. We'll check our calendars for a special meeting for that particular item, one item. Member Gaddis, going back to the questions.
And I guess I'll start out with this. As I hear us talking about this, and I hear, an exceptional teacher wanted to start a charter school for this STEM. We put her in a school within a school. She did a great program. Darn those teachers. When they do so great, all the parents, they want to send their kids, and they bring us this mess. But, I mean, I think that's what we want. We want to have too many students wanting to go to this great program. Now I feel sitting here that we're almost punishing those parents that got on board, that teacher that had this vision, and we're saying, no, you can't go there. And I really struggle with that. I hear you talking about the dust cloud and all that, and I got to tell you, I would go to Mrs. Wick through the dust cloud. That's how great of a teacher she is. And I think clearly with the parents wanting to go there, I mean, we're seeing that. So we create a great program, and then we have so many people going there. And I'm really struggling with that. So I think that's why this special meeting, I mean, there's got to be an answer.
Just some clarification from Dr. Perarmo.
Yes, and this is not to take away from the teacher, because absolutely the program and the teachers throughout, but the real issue isn't those boundaries that are going into the STEM program, because this year it was only 60. Mm-hmm. The real problem is that we redistrict home students to Mockatons. We are going to continue to allow the STEM initiative students to continue in that program, and that was a goal. What the situation now is that the traditional boundary students don't have room in the school. Even if we took 60, those 60 boundary kids who are there just for STEM away, mm-hmm. we would still have the same problem, because we included a broad boundary, and we can say in error 3 years ago or whenever that was, 4 years ago, that was done because to help Palmer not have to go there. I mean, really, we made some decisions in the past based off of the best information at the time, and the homes around Mockatons have grown so much that really the kids who want to get in there now live in the areas of 1, 2, 3, and 4, which technically, when the school was built, we're not going to be traditionally Mockatons boundary kids. So we would still honor that STEM. It's the neighborhood children, and we've just expanded that neighborhood so large that there's new growth.
Can I ask a follow-up? You've stirred something here, and then I'll get back to you. So there's 60 students that went there because of STEM.
And there's more in the STEM program, but the kindergartners and the apps for STEM this afternoon at 2:30 totaled 64.
Okay.
Sorry, Mr. President. There were seats for the neighborhood children that equaled half of those. So they reserved room for the neighborhood children in the STEM program. So they would already, even though they're in the STEM, they're already in the neighborhood boundary.
Okay, so if I'm a Cottonwood Creek parent with a child that wanted to be in the STEM, and I was there this year in the STEM, do I get to stay there next year for the STEM program? A. B, what happens if I'm in the Mockatons area now and, for whatever reason, I really want to get in the STEM next year? Do I stay in the STEM and stay in Mockatons? What happens if we start getting a lot of people that want to be in the STEM this next month?
I can answer that. The students will remain in the STEM program because it is a continuous curriculum. They have half in the class. So half of those classes, the teachers that are in that special program, are reserved for outside the district, the boundary, if you will. They will remain in. Since the start of the program, even last year, because they reserved half for neighborhood kids and half for the students who are outside, even the neighborhood kids who wanted to go into the STEM program had to go into the neighborhood STEM program lottery. And the kids outside the neighborhood for STEM had to go in the outside of the neighborhood lottery. So there weren't enough seats initially even in the STEM. So the children who are in the STEM program will remain in the STEM program. And in the kindergarten STEM, they will have half of the seats for outside, half for inside, just in the STEM program. Okay. In the larger school, what's being proposed is that all third and fourth graders get to stay at the school. All of their siblings, if they are in first and second and third grade, remain at the school. then all others who have put in boundaries go through a lottery similar to other schools. We've had, when Cottonwood was over 500, not all boundaries were accepted. They were only accepted in classrooms that had room. This year at Birch Tree, for instance, they ran a special lottery. A student could go into the sixth grade with a family, but a family member couldn't go into the seventh grade simply because there wasn't room, so they lotteried those off. It's when it happens both in charter schools, special mission, and neighborhood schools when there isn't enough space for boundary exceptions.
Member Gaddis, I think you were...
Well, I am. I'll come up with more questions for our next meeting because I have a lot more things.
Member Larson, any questions? Okay, any additional questions for members of the board at this point? Okay, so we'll look at our calendars at the end of the meeting for future items and schedule a special meeting. And then once again, it'll be a one-item meeting. This takes us down to C. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
This takes us down to C, 12-129 Fronteras Charter School Renewal. Dr. Paramo.
You can read through this. We do have a charter school moving into their fifth year next year, and they are allowed to apply for renewal by next October to the state. So we wanted to get a jump on this and get the data in early. The school APC had a committee of teachers and parents review their charter with district administration, went through an audit, if you will, worked collectively, and administration does recommend that Fronteras Charter School be renewed for a 10-year charter. But this is first reading, and you can ask questions, but they did fulfill their successful program, and the data is within the packet. This is just an early request.
So there, sorry, Member Lacey.
This is a 10-year charter? And the first one was a five-year?
Correct. Through the president, the state charter law and rules, you can't get a charter longer than 5 years initially. And then upon showing and demonstrating 5 years of success and review by your board, you may apply for a 10-year charter.
Can I do a follow-up? So administration is recommending to the board that it be a 10-year and not a five-year?
Correct. That was what was requested by Fronteras, and we do not see a problem with the program that the board wouldn't support at Fronteras.
Member Gaddis.
I know that this doesn't really have to do with the actual charter, but it kind of encompasses the whole thing. So can you tell me what the status is of the charter school new building? For instance, I think that the actual lot, the ground, if you will, the borough is, but what's the status of the actual building? Are they going to stay there another year and work it out? Is that the plan?
Through the president to Mr. Forrest.
Yes, as we understand it at the present time, we're still working with Fronteras on this issue. You are correct. The borough does appear to be moving to finalization of providing them what they're referring to as the Bogard site, which will be co-located with the Matsu Day School and the maintenance facility. Therefore, the site appears to have been finalized. With regard to funding, their request for funding at the legislative level was not funded this year. There were some hints given to us about a different methodology to request funds for next year. It would be insufficient to construct a facility. Excuse me. With regard to the certificate of participation, which was previously mentioned, currently that appears to be outside the realm of affordability for the charter school. So they are now on to moving into looking at other alternatives as to how to fund or acquire a facility. And they're currently looking at options as to whether or not they should renew their current lease in their current location.
Member Pollinger.
I know that if we approve this charter for 10 years, there is always the ability for the school district, if there is a problem, for the school board to pull that charter. That doesn't, even if we approve for 10 years, that doesn't, you know, take away that right to pull a charter if we deem necessary. Is that correct?
Through the president, that is correct. You may not only question this charter and review it, you may review any charters, charter, if you will, for due cause if there's problems with the educational program or budgetary concerns.
Member Larson.
Other charters, do they have senior charters or charters at the time?
Through the president, all of our charters, once they show success after the 5 years, we do have done a 10-year renewal after that.
Can you name them that have a 10-year right now?
Academy Charter School.
Okay.
Midnight Sun Charter School. If you recall, American Charter Academy just turned to a charter school last year, so they are part of the SIG grant, so they need to reapply for that as well. Twinley Bridge, I believe, at the time they did a 5-year renewal at their choice. And the last one is Birch Tree. And remember, we just requested, you had approved a 5-year. They're still in their first 5 years.
Member Larson. He said thank you. Thank you, Mr. Larson. I have a question, and it, once again, it has to do with the 10-year and what Member Pauger brought up. So you have a 10-year charter, but you have a 1-year, you continually monitor the schools in which, what can happen if something happens in 1 year?
The board has a contract with the APC of each individual school, and that contract, if broken, can come under review. And at that time, what you have in your contract, if the school isn't following it, they've broken the contract and said you can take that. But the one thing that you do have if you pass the new charter school board policy is that you have data that really calculates really how things are done. That was a request by this board to have more information, the kinds of information that you'd like. And it's in comparison the district-wide data that we pull. The charter schools, you know, going back to that, we're happy to be able to have a common system to report to the board.
Any other questions for members of the board? This item will appear once again at our next board meeting for action. This takes us to item D, 12-130, first reading, BP 3100 budget. Dr. Paramo.
Mr. President, I'm going to refer to Mr. Forrest, the Chief Business Officer.
Yes, in response to board questions with regard to how the preliminary budget was sent to the borough this year, we're updating board policy 3100 and the associated administrative regulation to make it, we hope, crystal clear as to what the requirements are and that a budget resolution must accompany the preliminary budget when it is sent to the borough. And then we then follow, because the policy was not absolutely clear either, that the board must adopt by resolution the actual adopted budget. And so we've inserted those two sentences, cleaned up the language to more accurately reflect the current language being used in the budget process, and we would recommend approval of this so that subsequent administrations know exactly what the requirements are.
Questions for members of the board for administration on the budget issue? Member Larson. Okay. Other questions for members of the board? Okay. Seeing none, this will come up in our next meeting. This takes us down now to a work session. Item 10, School Board Policy Committee recommendations. The School Board Policy Committee met to discuss certain items, and I'm going to turn this over to them. I was part of it, but I wasn't there at that particular meeting, so it's Member Welton and Member Lacey. They're going to talk about what items they would like to discuss right now at this moment. And then I guess we entertain a question and answer period and see where we go from there. So, with that.
Yeah, I got it.
Member Welton, Member Lacey.
Okay, through the chair. We met, and every year it's board policy for us to tackle some policies. And this year we tackled the school board policy, specifically talking about emailing or texting on a cell phone during meetings. The second part is the electronic boardroom, and the third is the executive sessions. But let me read this to you. Board policy 9272, board member conduct. There's a section here. It says violation of these standards may subject a board member to formal censure by the board. In particular, a board member may be subject to censure for the following types of conduct. A, violation of the district's board member of code of ethics, violation of board policies and prescribing standards for board member conduct, commission of an act that reflects on the board member's fitness to serve as an advocate for children or that tends to bring the district into disrepute. I would like to insert D right behind A, B, and C that I just read to read, emailing or texting on a cell phone is not paying attention to the meeting at hand and the device should be turned off. After that, insert E, no board member shall campaign on school grounds during their term, and this includes all school functions. That's the first part. Board policy 9320, which is meetings. I would like to insert a paragraph in there, a new section called electronic boardroom. Emailing or texting from a computer or some other electronic device, whether personal or school district owned, during a meeting shall be available to the public through the Freedom of Information Act. All of these correspondence should follow the Alaska Open Meetings Law. And then the last change is executive sessions 9321. Insert a paragraph in there, executive sessions. Cell phones shall be turned off during executive sessions with the exception of a member using a cell phone to attend the meeting. The cell phone transcripts shall remain confidential. Mr. President.
Question. Member Welton, do you concur with the changes you were in the committee?
Those were changes that came up. I do not necessarily agree with all of them. Those were things that came up, and so they're here for us to discuss. We did do some due diligence and look at other places and their policies on emailing or texting or using cell phones. We did look at what the borough policy was, because they did at one time have an issue with it, and then they just said no cell phone use. And so that's one of the things that was brought up. As far as E on 9272, we're only board members when we are doing designated board business and in board meetings. And so I'm not so sure that that they're, you know, what to do with E.
The E that Member Lacey's proposing.
Yes.
And can you tell us what that E is one more time? Because I don't.
The E is no board member shall campaign on school grounds during their term. This includes all school functions. And our board policy already says that we're private citizens, except when we are sitting here as a board or have a designated duty as a board member.
So you're not necessarily concurring with that?
No, I'm not concurring.
Okay. You are concurring with cell phone?
The texting a cell phone, it's following board policy, or borough policy, and I thought that as a subsidiary of the borough, we probably ought to comply with the issues that they brought up and why they don't.
So you're concurring with that As a follow-up is with the borough,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily with the stated reason that Mr. Lacey had, which was not paying attention during meetings.
Well, according to cell phone etiquette and meetings and things like this and businesses, I mean, there's been articles in several major publications about the rudeness and the impropriety of texting and answering cell phones during meeting. And I would like to be role models. I can tell you at the college level, it's ridiculous to sit in a classroom and try to teach when everybody is texting everybody else. They're taking tests and they're texting. They're doing these kinds of things. And, you know, we ought to be the role model of how to have an appropriate meeting.
Appreciate that. Thank you. Well, it's opened up now for questions from members of the board. Member Powger.
On item E, it says, no board member shall campaign on school grounds during their term. This includes all school functions. Now, there's nothing to preclude somebody running for a school board from campaigning on school grounds at football games, putting flyers on cars or anything like that. I think that a board member, when they're running for office, is a private citizen. Of course, we don't campaign inside the school. We don't put up flyers inside teachers' lounges and things like that. But I think that saying that a board member can't do that, whereas a private citizen can, might be a problem.
Member Gaddis.
I have something to talk about all of them, but I'll stay on E just for continuity here. I'm thinking, and quite frankly, I'm thinking back when I ran for school board. I'm thinking that at the time there were other groups that supported other school board members. They got to put their flyers in the teacher's lounge. And why would I not be able to put my flyers in the same teacher's lounge? So why it concerns me that, and I'll just be honest here, if the union supports a school board member, then they get to put the flyers in the teacher's lounge. But if I'm not supported by the union, then I did not get my flyers in the lounge. That doesn't seem like it's a fair balance. So I have a challenge that I think all citizens should have the same rights when they run for school board. And that's my statement.
Member Lacey.
You know, in the interest of fairness, and I'm all about fairness, and looking back here at AR 419-25, it says that employees are not allowed to campaign on school grounds. I think we should allow everybody to campaign on school grounds. I know there's at least a couple of signs out in the parking lot right now, but my point is, let's change this policy so everybody can do it.
I'm there with you.
2,000 employees, the public. Let's even go further. Let's charge candidates to put signs on the fences around the schools, and we could hire some more teachers. Either we do it all or we don't do it.
I have no problem.
Member Larson.
Thank you. This issue has been brought up in the past, and it's been hashed over long before I got on the board. And the whole issue is, if you take no members or no citizens can campaign on school grounds, then you go as far, and I've seen this challenge, with bumper stickers. You know, the question is, you want me to then go out to all the cars in the parking lot and start taking off not only local bumper stickers, but national bumper stickers.
Sure.
As well as signs in the parking lot in back of pickup trucks, because Mr. John Levy, I used to have a sign in back of my pickup truck. And a private citizen took that sign and parked it at the Palmer High School. And he was challenged. I didn't have anything to do with it. It's a private citizen. He was challenged to that, and the challenge came back legally that that's a parking lot. And that, what we should look at is the attorney ruled, I believe, at that time
that we can't regulate parking, that
they
are public domain. Because if you want to regulate parking lots, then who's going to be the parking lot cop that goes around and straight bumper stickers up? So what is it good for citizens?
I don't have a bumper sticker.
Now, the issue about inside the school, as well as inside state buildings, is you can't wear, like, for instance, state employees can't go inside a state building with buttons on for certain campaigns or flyers or campaigning within that state entity as a state employee. So if we're going to earmark these kinds of campaign issues, we should also look at rules and regulations that have been passed and have the legality issues, such as the state employee, such as the state government, and such as the public department, and not just
thank you.
I didn't hear half of it.
Any other questions or comments?
Yeah. Sorry.
Member Gaddis.
I wasn't able to hear all of it, but I think I got the gist. In regards to state employees not wearing buttons, basically their boss is telling them not to wear certain things in their employ, and I get that. But at the same time, you know, we've had T-shirts being worn. This is a freedom of speech, and I don't think we should regulate it. And I'm challenged with the fact that we're stating that we want some things, but we won't allow other things. We got bumper stickers, but we won't. I don't think that that's our job.
Right.
The rule was the employee should not campaign while they're on duty, such as wear buttons and this type of thing. But what they had in the parking lot, they are private citizens, and that's a public domain or a public parking lot. It's not like it's a school parking lot, it's a public parking lot. Same thing like a football game, track, cross country. All these kind of things, if somebody walks into that entity with a button on it, that's a public event. They're not campaigning within the school to say, here, they have a button on, that's a public event. My whole thing is, there's a legal aspect that has passed the test of time that we should be looking at, instead of just trying to determine it on our own. I would like to see what that is, and if we could, for instance, pass this policy, and it would meet all legalities without interfering with individuals and the public's rights.
Yeah, I'll make a comment. There's been an army of lawyers all over the country that build into our policies boilerplate language for what we do. You know, it's a lot of this is constitutionally tested and looked at, et cetera. The one area where there should be zero politicking is involving children during school hours, especially because you have a captive audience and they're here to learn supposedly about content, etc., and not be used as walking billboards for a particular candidate, nor are they supposed to be, for lack of a better term, brainwashed or taught in a manner that a particular candidate or a particular political bent or stint, etc., should happen. Now, I know we have a number of different clubs and associated clubs. I don't know if we have any political clubs for students, especially in high school, but there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with the political process. Personally, I like Mr. Lacey's idea of opening it up totally, but I think that's what we have except in the classroom. In reference to Member Gaddis, there is a negotiated agreement for the unions to have a bulletin board in the lounge, but also during campaigns, it is permissible by policy for other candidates to drop their literature of dealing with their campaigns in the lounge, but it's supposed to stay in the lounge. The only other issue, and I could be correct if I'm wrong here, is 24-hour rule during an election when the schools are used as polling places. There's no politicking within 24 hours on school grounds, period. No buttons, no, technically speaking, no bumper stickers, et cetera. Personally, I think it's a free speech issue, and I think anybody and everybody, with the exception of inside the classroom and a 24-hour rule, anybody and everybody can drop off literature or have a bumper sticker or have a sign in their pickup truck the size of a truck. Member Lacey.
Member Welton just pointed out to me that when the school board is acting in an official capacity, like we are now, campaigning shouldn't be allowed. Am I not correct?
That is what Member Welton said. That's correct.
So anything that's just let's just say there's a big box van out in the parking lot that says Neil Lacey for president. Okay? Since I'm here at a school board meeting, that's unacceptable. And it shouldn't be allowed. Well, unless we allow everybody in the countryside to be a part of that.
Member Welton.
But I could have a bumper sticker that has to do with some resolution in some small town in Oregon on my vehicle, and you would have to say, okay, I've got I can't bring that vehicle onto school property then. I mean, it would start to get ridiculous about that. While people are here at the meeting, they cannot be campaigning. Once they go outside, it is the public parking lot, and that is, I believe, what the laws allow. And if we were to have a gate out there and have to have people park along the road, I at the current time, I'm driving a vehicle that doesn't have a bumper sticker, but sometimes I drive one that talks about peace. Somebody could think that I'm campaigning something for peace, and that could be, you know, unacceptable then.
Member Lacey.
The parking lot is not public per se. Am I correct in that? Whoa, let me back up.
No.
I can't have a gun in my car. Therefore, it is school grounds. Are we correct there? So it's not private. It's school grounds. It's not public because it's school grounds.
Correct.
Right?
Well, let's say correct.
So if I had a big box van with my name there and we're all at a school board meeting, every Tom, Dick, and Harry and Joan that walks through that door sees my ad.
Mm-hmm.
That's campaigning on school grounds.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't be allowed.
And I think what Member Welton is saying is we are not board members unless there's a duly constituted meeting. And then once that ends, it's over with. Yes?
The second we drove onto school grounds, we are officials. You can't just decide that when we walk through the front door of that school, you're a school board member. The second you drive onto that school ground, you are a board member. Therefore, we shouldn't allow it.
Mr. Dunley.
Member Gaddis.
We can go on all night long. But quite frankly, we were board members when we gave our oath. And whether I'm in the grocery store or wherever, I do conduct myself as a board member. But I'm also a private citizen. And we also have other private citizens that enter our parking lot. I don't see how we can follow up with the enforcement. Enough said.
I'd like to sure, Member Larson.
We have a grocery and dispensary free parking lot, which is state and federal law. We have campaign law that says you can't campaign within 24 hours of the area. I contend that our parking lots are private. I mean, are not private. They are public parking lots, and that is ruled by our attorney before, because this question came up 4 years ago, and it came up over
pretty heated election and came up for president, if campaign plans could be, like, for instance, as well as local elections and everything else.
3 miles away.
If you really want an issue with this, we have a school board attorney that can tell us exactly
right
what
there is my official sign. You're up. Okay, just quick, is there any concurrence with Mr. Lacey to put this on as an item to change policy on the school board policy regarding campaigning? Is there any other individual that supports putting this on an item for action? Okay, let's move on to the other one, which is texting.
Very good.
Are there any questions from members of the board for the committee on texting? I think you do concur with Member Lacey, Member Welton on texting, correct?
Yes, I do.
And your rationale is to be consistent with the borough?
Yes, and to promote appropriate behavior in meetings. It is not to say anything bad about people who do this, other than that it is inappropriate in a meeting to be the role model, and to promote that we are paying attention to our job.
Thank you. Any questions from members of the board regarding the item on texting? Member Gaddis.
I text, but I don't text during the board meetings. I have been known to check my calendar that's on my device. At that time, it becomes a device, not a telephone. I don't talk on the phone during board meetings either. But nor do I pass notes. There are times that I've asked for clarification from my neighbor. So I think we have all done that. So I don't know where the texting and where the, hand motions or whatever come, but I think that the intent on paying attention is there, and I guess I don't see a problem. I'm not sure what we're fixing. And we will be, this kind of goes hand in hand with the electronic boardroom. Is that what we're calling it? With the, with our laptops, our computers. The same thing, Again, we will be going paperless soon, and we'll be using our electronic devices. I don't see those as texts. I see that as pulling up our electronic information. So I don't see it as a problem. That's my statement.
Member Larson?
Yeah, I don't see it as either. I saw it as an issue that the borough had. I don't see it as an issue within the school board. I understand why it's brought up, but I don't see it as a problem at this time with our school board. I'm neutral either way. It doesn't matter to me, because I don't text and I usually don't email. But that's me. As the younger generation comes up and gets on these boards, I think that might be the issue that we're looking at in the future, I'm not sure.
Any other comments from board members regarding the concept of texting? Member Lacey.
Well, back to the idea of an electronic device, i.e. a cell phone. And we're going down to the executive session. Those things need to be turned off. If you have to mark, if you have to calendar something, you can do it on the computer. Cell phones, and I'm going to let everybody in on a little detail here. If I had a cell phone, I could record you, and you wouldn't know. I wouldn't have to tell you, and that's wrong. If I was going to be chewed out by, say, I don't know, Delaney here, I would have my cell phone on, and if she was an administrator who was throwing weight around, there's a labor case right there. My point being, we need to turn these things off during meetings. Period. Turn it off. And if it has to be turned on, then it needs to be part of the confidentiality.
Okay. Let's let Mr. Larson go and then Member Gaddis.
Just one other comment, and I want this, of course, it's in our board policy for our school board members. I want to emphasize that I feel it is okay for staff to be able to use their electronic devices to get information. In the board that I'm on right now, we do not use cell phones. The board members don't have cell phones. Their phones are turned off when we walk into our deliberations or intro meetings. Our phones are put up. Our board staff phones and electronics are utilized to retrieve information that we request. So they're continually calling people telephonic or getting information that is necessary to make a decision. So I never want this to spill over to the staff. I feel the staff needs to be able to utilize anything and everything, especially when we start asking questions.
Thank you. Member Gaddis.
Well, I just want to make the comment that, quite frankly, if it's a concern about being recorded in executive session, there's a lot of devices that can do that. I use, for some secretarial duties that I have on boards, there's a special pen that's made for recording audio and video, and it's made for it with special paper. I mean, seriously. I mean, if somebody's going to record, I think it could be done many, many different ways. I don't think just the cell phone is the answer. And I think that, you know, I don't have an iPad, but I have friends. You can take all kinds of things with computers, too. So, I mean, I don't know where it stops and starts, but it's not just the cell phone.
Member Pollager.
I thought that one of the concerns with the emailing and texting and getting phone calls during a school board meeting would be that people are giving you information on the on what we're talking about, on what we're discussing as a school board. I believe in the ethics of our school board. I also don't believe that anybody here on the school board would look at an email or a text and vote the way that they are being requested to vote just because of an email or a text. I do sit next to Member Gaddis, and I see that she gets texts and phone calls during the meeting. She never looks at them, and she doesn't make phone calls or answer those during the meeting. Her device is sitting there, but it doesn't go on, and you don't read them. And I don't believe that Member Gaddis would change a vote on what she gets on her text.
Member Lacey.
I don't believe the House of Representatives down in the Capitol or the Senate are allowed to have cell phones on the floor, are they? No.
No, but we'll have staff.
So therefore, we should at least model our ethical behavior with cell phones according
after
to...
After Juno? I'm sorry.
We beat this to death. Come on.
Is there concurrence with... I'm just going to make a quick statement here. I don't necessarily want to model our board after Juno. But there was an issue brought up of distractions. I have been distracted with folks writing notes and talking and so forth. But that's part of in my opinion, that's part of the business that folks are trying to communicate with each other on the board as there's issues and items occurring. Regarding what the borough does, I mean, again, the borough is the borough, and, you know, there's things I think that we would want to model, and there's maybe things we don't want to model as far as the borough, or other bodies for that matter. I concur. These things are, trust me, I really don't know how to use this as well as some, but these things are smaller versions of those things. Those things are bigger versions of this, and I concur with Member Pollager. I've seen no evidence of abuse in executive sessions. These are all possibilities, but if we're going to start making rules because of a possibility, we're going to be ruled out here pretty quick. I mean, I don't necessarily agree. So, but the committee worked on this, and I think I and the rest of the board appreciate that. The question is, is this an item that we want to have come to a vote at the next meeting? And I respect the concept of if there are two folks that concur with an item, we can bring it up. And Member Welton, I know Member Lacey wants it on there. Member Welton, do you want the issue of this brought up? Because I'm sure there may be other board members that are going to amend that policy to include a whole bunch of things that could be distractions.
Okay, part of the... I think that it should be brought up because I think there should be public testimony and input into it, too. I don't like the idea of people saying, well, somebody texted you the answer. Somebody told you that this is how to vote, that kind of thing. My computer's on right now, but it's not hooked in. It is not in the system. And that would be what I would hope that we would all do when we're in a meeting, is not be hooked into the system. We have maybe our school board secretary could be, and staff could be, but we do not need to be hooked in to receive information and to remain paperless. I'm not saying that people will do this. I'm not saying that it's, you know, I just think that putting a cell phone away and not looking at it, I think that's okay to do that.
Member Lacey, then we're going to move on.
I would like the public to weigh in on the campaign thing.
You don't have another concurrence.
Okay, that's fine. I can live with that. Thank you.
Okay. And we'll bring this up because there's two folks that would like this item. We'll bring it up at the next board meeting. We'll have public discussion. I will add this, though. Member Welton, you mentioned about weighing in through electronic device. Over the 3 years I've been on the board, I have seen recesses and timeouts where members go with representatives of constituent groups into the hall and have discussions regarding an item and then come back, and some would construe that maybe they got information in the hall. So, I mean, we'll bring it up, but we'll see where it goes. Anyway, with that, we are moving on to future items. We have to have a special meeting on the one item regarding the boundary change. So, I'm going to look at my calendar when we do this on this thing here, but go ahead.
I would like to bring up for future items. I've had calls from parents that had their kids go to proms in Anchorage and business people, and quite frankly, the discussion is that we'd like to keep the proms in the valley so that the money stays in the valley. There are business owners that feed kids, and they would like the kids to, they feel that they voted on a large school bond, and they'd like to participate, specifically the businesses, these nice dinners that these kids go to, the functions that they go to, and to be able to offer a facility and catering, etc. So I would like to bring up for discussion and possible resolution keeping our proms and other school functions that we spend money here in the valley.
We need to decide when our meeting is going to be, a special meeting.
Okay.
On boundaries. We captured what you said, Member Gibbs.
I got it.
So we're going to have to make some decisions on that. Are there any, once again, it's a 24-hour notice, are there any recommendations?
Mr. President, would May 9th, 1 week from this evening, be appropriate or good for those folks?
I'm open on May 9th.
May 9th, what day?
As per my calendar.
Yeah,
Member Larson. May 9th.
Oh, that was easy.
5 o'clock. Palmer High?
Correct.
Okay. One item.
And we will notify
Palmer High.
Palmer High School. And we will notify members. I believe, if I may, Mr. President, just summarize the meeting on Monday a little more. The input, of course, as we shared, was overwhelming of the folks that went, the 23
parents out of the that may have some of the 144 kids was that they really love their school. They love Mockitans. They did appreciate being heard. What they didn't like was the timeline. And we explained that, and that was working between Mr. Bingham and the borough and the district. So they appreciated that. They requested then, they understood that June 6th would be the day for their input, and they knew that they valued that input and why it went to two meetings. But they will be delighted that the board has taken the first step forward to offer them May 9th, because that was not a request of the group. And so I appreciate that happening, because a request was for administration to just make a recommendation just now on the spot. And I did mention to them that that's not really how it's done. And so taking this step forward is certainly really knowing what your constituents desire. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay. So May 9th, did we say 5 o'clock?
Mm-hmm.
5
o'clock?
Yeah, that's a good question. The question over here for members of the board and Member Larson was, is 5 o'clock too early for folks to get off of work and get over there? So maybe we should move it up. What would be the recommended time? Is 6 gonna work?
We can make it work.
Okay, so let's do that at 6.
There was a request maybe for 5:30, Mr. President.
Let's shoot for 6.
6 o'clock, it is.
Okay.
We can do it.
Okay. What's that?
Shannon Bingham can't be there, but we can do it. It's our business.
Member Lacey.
Is the scope of the meeting just going to be the boundary thing and that's it?
Yes.
Okay.
Public hearing and the boundary just changed.
Yes. Okay, so with that, and then we have a yes.
I would like to request that if the board so chooses that you could move your June 6th board meeting from the Palmer location to the remodeled gymnasium in the administration center.
On June 6th.
We're just not there yet.
Okay. Okay. So Member Gaddis has a request that get information for that on proms or out of borough school, extracurricular school activities like proms. We have a meeting on the 9th at 6 o'clock at Palmer High.
At the 9th?
May 9th.
Okay.
May
9th.
May 9th, correct?
Got it.
We have a request by administration to just move our June 6th meeting locale to the newly remodeled boardroom at the district office. Others? Any others? If there are some, just, you know, contact administration and...
Mr. President, please note that on June 6th, that is the last awards evening, so that meeting would start at 5, just to be noted.
Okay. I was reminded we may want to look at our calendars again to start to schedule a board retreat. So, we would shoot for June, I'm assuming. How about June 12th and 13th? Member Pauser.
I'm out of town for a wedding from June 8th through the 17th, maybe. It's a Saturday.
That's a long wedding.
Sunday. It's a darn long wedding.
Okay. So then there's another suggestion, the 22nd. I really don't want to meet on the 22nd. How many would prefer to meet on the 15th and 16th?
Well, she's still going to be out of town.
No, I understand that. Is there anyone else who wants to meet on the 15th and 16th, though?
Okay.
No. She is okay with that, not being there. Okay, so, Member Pauser, you're okay if we have a retreat on that date, because we have another conflict with...
I trust you guys to... make good goals for the next year.
Okay, so let's shoot for the 15th and 16th as the retreat, and that'll be in the district office, newly remodeled boardroom.
By students.
By students, that's correct. And when we go in there, hopefully you can bring the students that helped, or at least some of them, so we can recognize their work.
That's it.
And that, the retreat is a public meeting, by the way, for members of the public. So we're shooting for that date. Okay. Is it? According to our board secretary, there is no June meeting. Okay, so this, once again, this is the 15th and 16th. Okay. With that, let's move down to our last session of persons to be heard on non-agenda items. Once again, the speaker states his or her name for the record. The speaker is limited to 3 minutes per meeting. The speaker is limited to non-agenda items. Agenda items will be open for public comment as they appear on the agenda. The speaker's comments should be appropriate for all audiences, including school-aged children. The speaker is limited to comments of a general nature, positive or negative, which may not be attributable to any specific individual. Issues involving concerns specific to any single individual should be submitted in writing and be given to the board clerk to be resolved. The issue may be determined to be appropriate for persons to be heard and may be handled in executive session or may be routed through a more appropriate complaint process. No disturbance or willful interruption of any board meeting shall be permitted. Persistence by any individual or group shall be grounds for the chair to terminate the privilege of addressing the meeting. The board may remove disruptive individuals and order the room clear if necessary. This is not a question and answer time. Speakers may be referred to the superintendent or designated to take the issue under advisement, and it's a maximum 1 hour per meeting. So once again, 3 minutes, please. Are there any folks that would like to come forward and speak on non-agenda items? If so, you can come forward, state your name for the record, and you'll have your 3 minutes. Okay. Seeing none, we move down to correspondence, board committee reports. Any additional committee reports? Any correspondence? Okay, this takes us down to comments from school board and administration. Dr. Parma, we'll start with you and your staff.
Mr. Forrest? Mr. Stone?
None.
Mr. President, if I may make a comment that actually should have been under future business, I do want to remind the board that written in my contract is the fourth and final evaluation. Knowing how the board has worked previously, I would like to suggest that on the June 20th meeting, that there's an executive session before the meeting for you to discuss my evaluation by yourselves, and then an executive session at the end of the meeting for the completion of that. The timeline is June 30th. Just knowing that the board appreciates that time is, so that would be a suggestion to have it run smoother as you have requested to have more discussion. If that's...
Seeing no issue, I don't see why not. So yes. Any other comments?
No, sir.
Okay. Member Gaddis, your comments.
I attended a STEM advisory, I think the first STEM advisory at McIntosh, and they've got a great group going together. I mean, I'm excited about what they're planning to do. They brought in parents, teachers, and it looks like they're moving in a direction that's parents are very excited about. So I just sat in on it, and I just wanted to comment that it looks like the group's getting it together there, and they're doing great things.
Member Larson.
To the end.
Member Pauser.
I'd like to thank Talkeetna for hosting us. It's been a lovely meeting, and the healthy snacks were wonderful.
Member Lacey.
Yes, over the last 2 weeks, I chaperoned the CHS prom at the Anchorage Museum, which I think I have to agree with Member Gaddis. That was a long way to go for a prom. I also chaperoned the, as my daughter calls it, the Senior Ditch Day at Colony High School. We went to H2 Oasis on Monday. It was fun. I also was asked to go and talk to Tony Jensen's class at Wasilla High School. And I thought every school classroom in this district had a Promethean board. I found the one that didn't. They asked me to talk. They wanted to ask me about the tardy policy, which I found a little on the it wasn't the same as when I was teaching here. Evidently now, when a kid is late for class, he has to go get a pass from somebody. Well, this particular morning, there was a young lady late, and it took her 15 minutes to get this pass or so. So I'm sitting there thinking, how is this a good program if the child has missed 15 minutes worth of class to go and get a pass from somebody? The kids thought this was a strange idea. I think I have to agree, too. the next question I asked them was about food. And I asked them flat out, how much would you pay and what would you want to eat if we served it here? And these were freshmen now. They told me that if they had some, for lack of a better term, a Subway-type place where they could get a sandwich, a fresh sandwich and something to drink, they would pay pretty much anything. They also said that there's not enough time for lunch. So with that being said, also, since it's summertime and our schools need maintenance, I'm wondering if we are going to extend some contracts for some custodians and whatnot to paint schools, to do grounds work, so we don't have to hire other employees to do this. Our custodians are hardworking. I'm sure they would like some extra money, and I think this is a good idea of our resources. And my only pet peeve of the evening is the sign that is at the end of the driveway to the mothership is a tobacco sign that's about this big. I agree tobacco is a bad idea, but the placement of that sign, where it's at, and a person like me driving a little bitty car, I can't see around it. Someone's going to get squashed.
Excuse me, Mr. Lacey. What is the mothership?
The headquarters building. The administration
district
building.
Office. Okay.
Thank you.
Is that it? Thank you. Member Larson.
Through the President, yes.
Mr. Larson?
Yeah.
Okay. Member Welton?
I went to Dr. Robert Brooks' in-service, and I was only going to stay for just a short time, and I ended up spending the whole day because he was such a fantastic speaker, had such great ideas, and it was really good to hear him. I also was at the diversity evening and at the BP dinner for Teachers of Excellence. I volunteered to do shaken baby syndrome demonstrations for Sherrod Elementary all day last Friday, and I've got to tell you, fifth graders are a tough bunch of kids. It's a hard audience. Also, I want to thank Delaney for serving, and the board appreciates your reports and your ability to speak and be a part of the process here. Thank you.
A couple questions, sir. Yes. Dr. Parmore, do you know, or could you get us information on Are there any high schools that disallow credit for a course based upon absences as opposed to performance? You don't have to answer that now. You do a little research and maybe do it in the board connect or in a message to us. Yes, I too want to thank Delaney. She has been a joy to work with. Delaney, I have a question. It's a serious question. What are your thoughts on proms being in Anchorage?
I have only been to prom once, and it was in the Valley, so I don't really have much to compare it to. But I think that it'd be good for business, but I think a lot of students would rather have it at locations that aren't necessarily in the Valley because the options are a little more limited.
Thank you. Again, I want to thank you for everything you've done. I want to thank the policy committee for their work on the policies and the board's discussion on that, and administration's work on bonding budgets and the demographics for the boundaries. Yes, and I want to thank Talkeetna for hosting this meeting, for having the PTA get us some healthy food over there. Unfortunately, we counteracted it with a cake that the district office brought up over here, so it's kind of a, you know, win-lose, I guess. And do want to thank that. It was my first shot of birch sap drink. I haven't had that. So I want to thank Talkeetna for hosting us and staff as well as the community. So with that, we are going to now move into an executive session. And when we come out of that, we'll adjourn. Is there a motion to move us into executive session?
I make the motion to go into executive session matters, the immediate knowledge of which would clearly have an adverse effect upon the finances of government unit. Subjects that tend to prejudice the reputation and character of any person, provided the person may request a public discussion, matters which by law, municipal charter, or ordinance are required to be confidential, matters of confidential legal counsel or pending litigation, specifically health insurance update, negotiations update, and personnel. And those people in the executive session is school board, Dr. Paramo, and Mr. Stone, and Mr. Forrest, and Katie Gardner.
Is there a second? Has to do with budget? Okay. Okay. And you're second on, so is there any unanimous consent to go into executive session, seeing no dissent? Mr. Larson wanted to add in the executive session an issue regarding budget as it pertains to charter schools.
We actually have to.
So with that, we're going into executive session.
We have to vote.
I'm sorry. Member Larson, how do you vote? Member Gaddis?
Yes.
Member Powager?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Lacey?
Yes.
I too vote yes. It's unanimous. We go into executive session. A 5-minute transition period to get in there.